Well, folks, it's about over. The end of August offers both endings and beginnings. For most of us, the vacation season has come to an end. So with family and friends, perhaps you spent some time at the seashore, as I did this past week, or went out fishing on a lake, or perhaps visited or toured an ancient city, or maybe even did some camping and hiking up a mountain. However you enjoy the summer of 2017, the days of summer leisure are winding down, and it's time to get back to work or back to school as another academic year begins. We welcome many students here, by the way, this evening, or as the new academic at Georgetown University or wherever students go. The readings tonight, especially the gospel, are, I believe, appropriate for here at the end of August. For you see, Peter's confession as Jesus, as the Christ, is the fruit of Peter spending time, in some ways leisure time, with Jesus, that the words he pronounces, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God," come naturally and seemingly suddenly. But they are the product of a process. Let's look at the context of tonight's gospel from the previous Sundays, the last three Sundays in August. 3 weeks ago, on the 18th Sunday of Ordinary Time, the gospel described how after Jesus climbed a mountain along with Peter, James, and John, was transfigured. Now you need to know that the mountain, which is today situated between what we know as Syria and Lebanon, is not just an ordinary mountain. It is 9,232 feet, Mount Hermon, one of the largest mountains in all of the Mideast. It's quite a height, folks. It's something, if any of you climb Mount Washington, to give you perspective, Mount Washington, the highest mountain on the East Coast, is just 6,300 feet. They really went up. And I like to think it was both fun and challenging in that moment of transfiguration on Mount Hermon. Peter and his disciples saw something. And you can imagine Peter trying to say, "Who is this guy? What's this all about?" Then 2 weeks ago, we hear how the disciples were on the lake fishing. Of course, there was a big storm, and Jesus appeared to Peter and the rest of the disciples and walked on water. Again, what was in Peter's mind? Who is this guy? By the way, parenthetically, I was in the water, that very same lake in Galilee, this past June on our pilgrimage of our parish. And guess what? Yep, I walked on water. You see, I found a long, maybe it was Jesus' secret. There was a pipe 100 yards extending into the lake, and I saw my chance. I not only walked, I danced on water, but that's another story. Then, last week, we heard how Jesus cured a Canaanite woman's daughter. Remember her pleading and bringing Jesus beyond the Jewish family of faith into a new one, the Gentile. And while it's important to realize this was in the land of Canaan, Lebanon, near Tyre and Sidon. What is Tyre and Sidon? Folks, they're seashore resorts for the Romans. He didn't go as far, but he was in that area. And now in this Sunday's gospel, we hear how Jesus and his disciples went near the ancient Greek and then the Roman city of Caesarea Philippi, a city which even in those days was known for its historic artifacts. It was a tourist city. Jews did not enter, but Jesus was in that region. Mountain, lake, seashore, historic city. Why, it's almost as if Jesus and his disciples were taking a vacation, like you and I, moving our minds, resting them, recreating them. Of course, Jesus never stopped his ministry, but you have to wonder that with all these scriptural settings that Jesus and his disciples, besides praying, were also playing in nature, which we often do in our vacation, getting a sense of the beauty of God's universe that Jesus as the Christ was encountering. By the way, wasn't it a powerful statement last week on the lunar eclipse? Perhaps you saw it. Some were in South Carolina or here. I was in Baltimore on a high tower looking for that. And just as the eclipse came, it started to rain. What can I say? But it did unite us as a nation, did it not? Something to think about. But here we are in this scene where Caesarea Philippi and the great statement, the great Christological statement is Peter's. After Peter makes these encounters on a mountain, in a lake, at a beautiful resort, and is saying, who is this Christ? Who is this Jesus? He's not just an ordinary prophet. So those processes that Peter had is our processes. How Jesus said to them, notice, do not tell anyone until I am raised. How about ourselves? In what ways might we have noticed that Jesus is the Christ? We may not go out shouting it, but like Peter, might we notice how Christ is present in our world? Not just 2,000 years ago, instances, examples, encounters, feelings, thoughts, meditations. Not just in prayer, but encounters, questions of wonder. Who is Jesus? Is he really the Christ for me, for us, for this time? Allow me to count some of the ways I've experienced Jesus being revealed through our parish this past summer, noticing some miraculous but also transcendent examples. For example, on the parish pilgrimage with parishioners, I had the opportunity to visit Holy Family Hospital in the Palestinian section of Bethlehem. There I observed a dozen premature infants in incubators. Almost all of them were born of Muslim mothers, but they were being cared for by Christian doctors and nurses and supported by members of the Knights of Malta, many of them being parishioners right here in our parish. And I noticed that the Knights of Malta, particularly in that hospital, live out the motto, peace through medicine. Yes, the Christ was being revealed as I watched a Muslim parents taking home their premature child after 1 month in a hospital that is Christian, that is supported by members of Holy Trinity. It was certainly a revelation of Jesus as the Christ presence. Another revelation was the concert we hosted early in June, where I witnessed, and some of you were here for that, more than 40 boys from the choir of Montserrat, 715 years old, this choir. Indeed, Ignatius of Loyola, during his conversion experience, went to Montserrat in Spain, near Barcelona, and probably heard the very same choir. What was that as a gift of revelation? It was sponsored by the Classical Chorale, an international organization one of whose mottos is peace through music, medicine, music, ways of Christ being revealed. And then there was the sign of Christ's presence 2 weeks ago when I attended the bi-weekly Saturday morning meeting of our men's group in the parish. They've been meeting for more than 30 years. 3 hours before the tragic incident in Charlottesville, I observed the witnessing of our men's group, our parishioners, discuss the issues of racism in our area, in our nation. This is before Charlottesville, but they were recognizing, particularly through the movie Detroit, those wounds, those worries that we're still living out as a nation, as in a culture. There were our parishioners taking it seriously. Meanwhile, this summer, I also saw our parishioners go forth. I had the privilege of missioning parishioners to do service ministry in El Salvador, Haiti, France, Zambia, and some of them moving towards pilgrimages elsewhere. They wanted the sense of the movement in their Christian journey of service to be grounded to this community of faith. And as I speak right now, a bunch of our parishioners are down the street serving the Sunday meals, which they do every Sunday, to the homeless. This is the sign of Christ's presence, being with us and among us. And of course, there are the many manifestations of Christ's presence through the regular sacramental ministries, the choral group, the music, and then the baptisms, the confessions, the weddings, and of masses, and of funerals. Let me give you another example of this, how this summer where presence of Christ was manifested. Last week, we had the experience of a poignant experience of a funeral mass of Staff Sergeant William Kundrat, one of the victims who died last month or a few weeks ago in the tragic plane crash in Mississippi. 16 Marines died. This parish was chosen. While he was not a parishioner, his family asked that this parish host the funeral, since the burial would be in Arlington. Staff Sergeant Kundrat left a young widow and two children. Allow me to describe briefly what I witnessed. I did not preside. Father Kelly did. He left an 8-year-old daughter and a 13-year-old son. In this situation of sorrow, I experienced a revelation of Christ. In observing the tears and yet the determination of a beautiful young widow, the sad beauty of an 8-year-old daughter, and the discipline and the respect of a 13-year-old son. You see, this son, like his father, this young man was a Boy Scout, and his troop and his father's troop were represented here. And so, as his father's remains were being carried up our parish steps, I saw this young man stand at attention and salute the remains of his father. And then this young man held his mother and his young sister as they walked through the threshold of our church. This is tremendously sad, but it was a sacred moment of family coming together in church, in community, supported by faith and by love. That very night, out of the blue, I got something on my Facebook. It read, "Dear Father, you may not remember me, but way back you taught me at Gonzaga High School." Folks, this is 1983. "You gave a lecture on love and the differences of love, agape, which is charity, philia, which is friendship. And this man said, I remember that and I carry that way of loving. And of course, loving God and loving neighbor. Father, I see that every day here in Afghanistan. As a Marine colonel, I observe what my men and women do for one another and for the people of Afghanistan. Father, we live out that lecture on love." I'm saying, what lecture? I don't remember. Okay? He got 100 in the test. He must have. But I share that with you because that's what it's about. We share loves. We don't know what kind of ways we're being influenced or we're influencing others. But love is what Jesus as the Christ is revealing. This is who you are. This is who we are called to be as believers in Jesus the Christ. Finally, 2 weeks ago, we got the latest magazine of the Jesuit News from the Maryland and New York province. You can receive copies in the back. It's a whole story on here, this parish, what we've done with the Syrian refugees. This is an example of how you, as the parishioners, are believing and living of Jesus is the Christ, not just years ago in Peter's eyes, but in your own journeys. And so I invite you to consider, what were the experiences of the summer, not just through the parish, but in your lives? What are those struggles that you find Jesus healing, giving you hope, giving us hope? Because this is how the church moves forward. Notice, too, that powerful line Jesus says, don't tell anyone. This is in Matthew's Gospel. But guess what? At the very end of Matthew's Gospel, Jesus changes the statement, go out to the whole world and tell the good news. A difference. The disciples were ready. Peter was ready after his sorrow and then his joy. Question is, how are you and I ready? Ready to go forth and tell the good news, share the stories, and give people hope in our troubled world that Jesus the Christ is alive and living and loving well through one another.